Absolute bullshit, but whatever.
I don't know how you could possibly say that. This is a gentleman radio talking about movies and TV shows, comics and gaming, but not Halo. This is a gentleman. It's the gentleman. It's the gentleman radio. Radio.
It is the gentleman radio, and we are recording on location at Reed Park. Awesomely.
It smells like a combination of animal dung and seawater.
Yeah. This is the worst it's ever smelled out here. I don't understand, really. I got out of my car and I smelled duck shit,
background
essentially.
Music and, you know, being interrupted constantly, and there's no pool balls getting hit. I don't hear people screaming in the background because they're dancing to salsa music.
But I'm smelling duck shit.
The listeners can't smell dog shit.
I said duck shit is the number one thing.
Either way. Dog shit, duck shit, what's the difference? Either way, listeners can't smell it. And if you can smell it, then that's your own problem.
Smell-o-vision.
So, we are going to be talking about some things today. There will be spoilers on those things. So, if you don't want to hear the spoilers, then cup your ears. We are going to be talking about our You Haven't Seen That recaps. Most of us. Charles has a very good reason why he did not see his movie, so he's not participating. But let's get to it. Patrick, your movie was...
Dirty Harry, which is awesome to watch on Easter. It was pretty great. I had to talk about at work today. I had to talk about, like, everybody was like, what did you do for Easter? I was like, I watched Dirty Harry for the first time. There was like just like Easter silence. Movie. Just like silence. And I was like, it was good. So yeah, I saw Dirty Harry. You know, I really like...
I've never seen it.
I liked the writing a lot on it, but it's like it was made in 1971, and it definitely has that sort of late 60s, early 70s sort of kind of deliberate pace to it, where it's like they just really establish where things are. It's like there's lots of shots of Callahan walking up some stairs. In case you didn't get that he was going to go meet the mayor upstairs, you have to watch him walk through the lobby, like from his car to the lobby, up the stairs, through a hallway. The secretary has to let him in, and then he gets to the scene. And so... it's a little bit slow in that regard. I mean, in terms of like how you would think of like an action movie, but at the same time, like the stunts that they do in it are pretty amazing because Clint Eastwood did not have a stunt double. So like, there's a scene where he jumps off a bridge onto a bus, and the camera's just on his face the whole time because it's him doing it. And you know, it's the writing is terrific. Like I love the sort of one-liners that he's throwing out and stuff. Although there was that one super racist joke in it, so...
Well, it was the 70s, too.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a very 70s movie. Definitely made me want to see the rest of the movies in the series. And loosely based on the Zodiac Killer in San Francisco, so... that's an interesting thing, too. Like, it's... I believe Dirty Harry was based very loosely on Detective Tochi, or whatever. There's a cool juxtaposition between, like... Dirty Harry himself and the villain that he's chasing, the killer in it, called Scorpio.
Too Cold Scorpio.
Yeah. So,
is that actually his name?
No, that was
a wrestler. I know that's a wrestler. I was wondering if the wrestler picked his name off of that movie.
Probably did, yeah. Probably did.
Well, that's like there's the other Harry Potter movie. Dirty Harry Potter movie. Deadpool, you know?
Yeah.
So there's some connections that come from that, you know?
Yeah.
I think Not Dirty Harry Potter is kind of fan fiction.
Dirty Harry Potter.
That'd be pretty sweet. Yeah. I think somebody should get on writing that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's been written.
You know, I have to say...
How many zaps were in my wand and all the about
Dirty Harry.
How many horcruxes did
have? I given Avada Kedavra five times, or have I done it six?
Tell you the truth and all the Quidditch. I couldn't keep track of it.
And this wand has a feather phoenix, the most powerful wand in the world. We'll take your head clean off. So you know what? You've seen it before, right, Charles?
Yeah, many times on TBS.
So, what's your take on it? Like, how do you feel?
Oh,
about
God,
it?
I love it, dude. I love those old 70s movies like that, and the original Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
Bullet, The French Connection. There's something special about him. Like you said, yeah, it's kind of racist. I mean, I am going to sound like a dick saying this. I'm not going to say not to be a dick, but, you know, as a time when they would portray those characters who would be racist as racist,
yeah,
because it wouldn't be considered not PC, we wouldn't have offense.
Right. No,
because it makes 100% for these characters in that time. to do it. I think that's why I'm getting a little rant here, but like things like Life on Mars, when they were in the 70s and it was a 70s cop and he was like a racist, sexist prick. Yes, a combination of a pig and a prick.
Prig.
Yeah, a prig.
Prig.
But it makes sense, you know. So I think it's something that we miss if we ever like go back to a 70s style movie. So those are very fond to me because it's like the hard, not even hard boiled. It's like hard boiled with some cocaine. Like they're just fucking batshit insane.
Yeah.
And they're like, mayor's on my ass. They're like, I don't give a shit, chief. I'm gonna do it my way.
Yeah.
My way is not by the book.
Well, I mean, my favorite line.
I can't even read.
My favorite line of that movie was when he's talking about the one like chief or whatever is having given him shit about like I don't want to have any more trouble with you like that incident, you know, whatever. And he's like. He's like, well, or you know, we don't want to have any more extreme stuff. That's my policy. And he's like, well, when I see somebody chasing a woman down with intent to rape, I shoot the bastard. That's my policy. And he's like, oh, you knew intent. And he's like, well, if the guy's running down naked with a butcher knife and a hard on, I don't think he's trying to I forget what the end of the line is, but
yeah.
Like trying to sell insurance or something like that, or collect for the Red Cross. That's what it was. I just love that shit. Like you don't get those lines anymore, really. Mm-hmm. You know. But also watching a movie like that, like, now, I see how many things have, like, directly ripped it off over the years, you know? Where it's like, oh, shit, like, there's just tons of stuff that comes from that, you know? And it's, like, it's really interesting. I'm really surprised that that Dirty Harry is a franchise that's never been, nobody's tried to remake it.
Gotta hope not.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, honestly, who could you possibly have? Like, who, like, there's nobody.
Jeff would probably say Channing Tatum.
Yeah, I don't think that we have.
Really, I can get you on that one.
Do you think that we have hard men now, like Clint Eastwood back then?
I think Josh Brolin might be able to play that kind of role.
But he's kind of a little bit old for it now, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah. Eastwood was very young when it started.
Was he?
Yeah. We're talking about, like,
71. Christian Bale, I could see playing that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he's kind of done, like, the Batman thing. I'd want somebody
Thomas
like,
Hardy?
Well, I know, but I would say somebody that was kind of, like, relatively unknown. Eastwood wasn't. Well, that well known at the time, so it was kind of cool. So you're not like, oh, we're gonna see Christian Bale as Dirty Harry or something. Like,
yeah.
Get somebody in there that can kind of like redefine it and redo it. Although I would say no to remaking those movies.
I agree with you. I don't want to see him remade. I think that it's interesting that Dirty Harry as a character isn't like some sort of like muscle bound badass all the time. He's just like, I mean, you know, he's tall. Clint Eastwood's like 6'4" or whatever, but
yeah.
But he's not like, you know, stocky. He's like this kind of like lanky dude that has a really fucking huge gun and just will not take any shit from anybody, and it's like it's all attitude with him, and I really enjoy that part of it.
The reason why I'd be like and I haven't even seen Dirty Harry, but the reason why I would be like, you know, rolling my eyes immediately at a Dirty Harry remake is I guarantee they would make it PG-13.
Absolutely. And this is not a thing that needs to be PG-13.
That's what I hate about remakes is when they then water them down. It's like, you know, I'd be totally cool with a RoboCop. I won't watch the RoboCop remake.
You
fuck that.
Don't.
It's PG-13. I will not. I refuse to watch it because it's PG-13.
Also, trust me, it sucks.
If it was R, I might give it a shot.
Yeah.
But well, I mean,
like
that's enough, right?
Jaws
there.
Or something too. You know what I mean? It's just not gonna. It's not gonna be the movie that it needs to be.
Well, because it would be like all CGI. It's either sharp every 10 minutes. It's like, you know, the.
And that's you couldn't remake Jaws.
No.
I mean, you couldn't remake Rear Window or Vertigo.
Oh, they've remade Rear Window a few times actually.
Yeah,
like
Rolling the Simpsons.
No, like
so
Disturbia. Disturbia is essentially exactly Rear Window, just with Shia LaBeouf.
I mean, they do that to 70s movies occasionally, like Gone in 60 Seconds, but that was such a completely different movie.
Awesome, like.
Yeah, but it's such a completely different movie, I don't mind. It's kind of stupid to borrow the name from it, like just call it something different.
Yeah.
You know, or if you're going to do that, have some kind of connectivity from the original movie, like Nicolas Cage is the guy's kid from the first one. Or
right,
you know, just.
What did you think of the Italian Job?
I saw parts of it. It was okay. The first one's just so awesome that it's like I don't really want to see a remake. You know, not interested.
How you guys doing? You doing pretty good?
Yeah.
Say hello to your mother for me.
I can mark that by real quick.
Are you fucking kidding me right now?
Yeah, he's not a bad actor, but that's not his kind of movie.
No, it's really not. Honestly, like he can't pull off the George Clooney role because the remake of you know, The Italian Job was essentially just them trying to like go, hey, let's redo Ocean's 11 with another old school property.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Bad business.
Anyway, I really liked Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry.
Like I said, I really want to see the rest of the series. I rented it on Amazon because I'm just on their HD streaming service or whatever. And it was worth it. It was worth the $3 that I spent to watch it on there. so I could watch it on my Xbox One.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I watched The Wackness, which I also totally ordered from Amazon. And it had been recommended to me from Nick. And he basically said about it that it had a whole lot of 90s hip-hop in it, and so I kind of thought it was a hip-hop movie. Mm-hmm. He's not wrong. There's definitely a ton of 90s hip-hop in it, and the soundtrack for that movie would probably be incredible. The movie's definitely not about hip-hop at all.
You could probably also download that from Amazon.com.
Yeah.
I could probably get that from Amazon.com as well.
They have a really good streaming service.
Although I'm pretty sure I have every song that was in the movie already that I've, you know, purchased.
Legally purchased, yes.
But, you know, it was actually a really good movie. I mean, basically, it's the kid is a drug dealer, a drug dealing virgin who has a lot of psychological problems and is seeing a psychiatrist, and he basically pays for his psychiatrist. Joshua Peck, who I've only seen Red Dawn.
Yeah, that's the guy you should
fuck that guy, man.
Yeah, and that's what basically brought Nick to say that, hey, you should see him in The Wackness. He's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And he
I'm
is.
I'm surprised you remember that. That's pretty
cool. He was the guy from Drake and Josh, by the way.
Actually is really good in it. Granted,
you're talking about his, like, derp face all the time.
Oh, my God, yeah. No, Red Dawn was fucking god-awful.
Granted, his, you know, his...
Speaking of bad remakes.
Yeah. I know, fuck off. God almighty. Just stop. If you're not going to do it right. Sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, so his character in the movie is kind of a whiny little bitch, so he fits it perfectly. That kind of makes me sound like I'm kind of a backhanded compliment, but he actually does do a really good job in the movie.
Yeah.
And basically he plays a drug dealer who pays for his psychiatrist, which is Ben Kingsley, with pot. And Ben Kingsley is incredible in this. I mean, other than Trevor Slattery, that is probably my favorite role that he's been in.
Really? All of, like, Ben Kingsley?
I was going to say, of all Ben Kingsley's work...
I really like him in this movie. He's
excellent. Well, no. I mean,
I'm talking more of the Trevor Slattery thing, yeah.
I mean, it's great, but, like...
Well, I've never seen Gandhi.
Well, duh. I mean, that's, like, 8 hours long.
Yeah.
That's actually still going on right now for the first viewing.
It's pretty good. But, I mean, like, Sneakers? No?
Never saw that.
Sneakers is awesome.
That needs to be
on your list, for sure.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead. I'm just surprised. I figured you would have more Ben Kingsley context.
Yeah. I guess I don't. But anyway, he's really good in it. Joshua Peck is actually really good in it. He does listen to a lot of hip-hop through it. It's early 90s hip-hop, so it's like basically like he'll hear Biggie for the first time, and he asks Method Man, who plays a Jamaican in the movie.
How's that work out for him?
Well, the funny thing is that like the song that they're listening to is off of Biggie's first album that has Method Man on the song. And so while Method Man, the actor, is talking to Josh Peck about, oh, this is a Biggie, you know, so you hear Method Man rapping in the background. So I thought that was like an awesome like touch there. But I thought the movie was great. It's sort of like a coming of age story of him basically just realizing that he needs a lot of experiences and sort of like taking them as they are. And like, I mean, this is a pretty major spoiler, but at the end it's sort of like he says flat out, he's like, I just want you to stay like there because this is the first time this has ever happened to me, and this is the first time I've ever experienced this. And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, the first time I've had my heart broken. And he walks out and he actually has a smile on his face because he's sort of like is okay with that, you know, like he realizes he has to have those experiences, and so he's like, wow, I just had my heart broken for the first time, you know.
And then he shot himself.
Well, that's not in the movie.
After making it a face.
it was a really good movie. I liked it a lot. Not a hip-hop movie, although lots of hip-hop in it.
Interesting.
What was your movie, Charles?
Wall Street.
Oh, Wall Street, okay.
So, no, I kind of want to watch it, but, you know, my do a little trip.
Have you seen Wolf of Wall Street?
No.
See that instead. That should
be
your
dude.
Movie.
I really don't have a desire to watch that. It's nothing
against
it. But
Wolf of Wall Street is incredible.
See, you're not helping.
Yeah, it is really great, Charleston.
See, and no, definitely not. Not to be a prick, but it's just like, just get badgered with it, and I'm sure it looks pretty awesome, but it's just, it's kind of like, how long did it take me to get back into Breaking Bad or really even watch it in the first place?
Yeah.
No,
I mean, is it just out of contrariness that you don't want to watch it, or
probably, or I'm just a prick. I don't know. You know, it's like I'm sure it's pretty good, but it's just
It's like you're going Martin Scorsese, you're going Oliver Stone.
Yeah. Well, and this was when Oliver Stone was pretty good too.
I mean, you know, Wall Street's a good movie.
Yeah,
it is.
I heard that Money Never Sleeps.
It doesn't.
especially when the beef is involved.
Also, greed is good.
Yeah. Well, that's from the original. I know that line.
Well, yeah, it's funny because like,
a
lot
seen
of
the movie either.
In Dirty Harry, like a lot of the iconic lines, like I've heard, like you already knew them already going in, which is kind of funny. It's weird to watch a movie like that that's so iconic. You kind of know everything about it before you see it, but you don't really know what the connectivity
is. What I think is crazy, and I don't know if this happened with Dirty Harry, is when you watch a classic movie like that and you hear a line that you've heard a million times, but you don't know that it's from that.
Yeah.
Well, in the context, too, that you see it, you're like, oh.
There was a Mystery Science Theater 3000 joke that, like, I thought I knew where it was from when they, you know, when they told it or whatever, but it, like, I started laughing about it last night because I got to the part that they're referencing in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's nothing special or anything like that. It was just something that I remembered back when he said it, because it sounded so much like what they, because Mike Nelson does a really good Clint Eastwood impression, as it turns out.
Yeah.
You know, the movie really got me, that was, you haven't seen that, was Blue Velvet. Like, when I watched that movie, it was just like a good like half to three-fourths of the lines in that movie
Amy
I'd heard.
What's the fuck?
Yeah, I had heard of other things. It's like from Mr. Bungle albums, from fucking like Clerks or whatever, where he's like, "Oh, fuck anything that moves," you know. That was the biggest one for me, where like I had just all this pop culture stuff like crashing in, and I was like, I had no idea that was from this part.
I think for me was when I watched Rear Window for the first time. It was like that and Citizen Kane. Actually, it was like already seen this movie a million times like spoofs and stuff.
Fucking the real Ghostbusters, you know, ruined the Rosebud thing for me. Yeah. And
for me, it was The Simpsons. But, I mean, like at least that's something that doesn't really matter in the long run.
I mean, at this point, it's so long that you've heard
and really the Rosebud thing.
I mean, it has nothing to do with the movie.
It doesn't make a damn bit of difference. But
that's sort of like the whole point of it. At the end, it's just like, it really didn't matter.
I could kind of see at the time the way media worked. Probably like you probably had like a 5 to 10 year like buffer on seeing the movie and not getting the ending spoiled, you know. Now it's like you've probably heard it somewhere.
Well, like if you're 10 years old, you know, The Sixth Sense has already been ruined for you.
Yeah, I mean, everything gets like, that's kind of like
that, you know,
what we talked a little
Bruce
bit about.
Bruce Willis is the guy with the receding hairline the whole fucking movie.
It was Bruce Willis the entire time.
Well, it's kind of like you know, Captain America, we were talking a little bit about that and how that got spoiled. I mean, it's like everyone kind of assumes that you've immediately saw it, and so much so that they had a TV show that was released, 4 days later, tying into it. So, I mean, things move.
They really
should
have had, like, some sort of, like, spoiler wording on the show, like, hey, if you haven't watched Captain America,
You know, it couldn't hurt. It could have been 10 seconds at the end of the week before and say, hey, make sure to see Captain America, because next week we'll contain some spoilers. Yeah. And boom, right at the beginning, hey, by the way, there'll probably be some spoilers for Captain America.
Yeah. But was there? I mean, like, other than Nick Fury being dead, which
well,
is
Hydra,
part of the
Hydra being, like, reemerging.
Yeah.
That was a big spoiler.
That's a huge one. And being, you know, embedded in S.H.I.E.L.D., so.
Yeah.
But, no, you know, I mean, I'm sure Wall Street will be pretty good. It'll be nice to sit down and watch it. I'll do that next time, so.
So, we wanted to talk a little bit about Game of Thrones this week, right?
Rape of Thrones, right. Yeah, which is interesting because, like, I was watching it. I have not read the books. And we have to talk about the director's reaction to this as well, because the intent of what they tried to have compared to what most people saw.
Yeah.
Like, I saw Collider's review. I love that website. And Collider's review was they have passionate post-grief sex, and I was like, really?
Oh.
And like, because I saw it and I was like, flat out, I'm like,
was it like
whoa,
Allison, like, who did the
I'm not sure who, but it was definitely a female. Which like shocked me that they didn't mention the fact that this was pretty hardcore rape. I mean, she's saying no stop the entire time, and like I was expecting it at first, because at first she's kind of like kissing him back. I thought maybe she was gonna just stop and say, okay, fine, take me or something. In front of their son's dead body, by the way.
I will say, I think it would have been at least
30%. But it doesn't happen.
It would have been at least 30% more badass if Jamie would have done the desk sweep to put her on. If he would have just swept the corpse off the thing and put her out on there.
And the book, too, was Joffrey had been running for quite a while, too.
Yeah, that was really smelly. You know, that was really
smelly. This was like a day, so that's not bad.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, and I did hear that during filming, the Jack Gleason would keep like taking the stones off his eyes and reach down and goes, "Mom, Dad?" having the scene, which is pretty funny.
That's awesome.
But also really disturbing since he was raping her.
Yeah.
But it never stopped. And like basically the entire scene at the very end, she's like, "This isn't right, this isn't right." And he goes, "I don't care," at the very end.
Yeah.
But I know in the book, I've read this, and this is pretty much all over the internet. In the book, she's resisting, but the only reason she's resisting in the book is she's saying someone's going to catch us.
Yeah.
And then she's like, "Fine, hurry, just take me, please, do me. Oh, Jamie. I mean, it becomes clear that it's consensual. She's not having a problem with what he's doing. It's just because of the time and place of what they're doing.
Right.
Whereas in this, I'm sorry, there's no like thing. Like the last time they were together,
she
told him, "Fuck you, I don't have anything to do with you." And this time he starts kissing her and she's like, Stop, and he drops her down. And
I will say that it when she says this isn't right, that's not exactly like I think that's them trying to get to, like,
well,
you're saying
it's
because of the place.
Problem with the director.
I 100% agree with you, because like when I saw it, I saw it as a rape when I was watching it. I was like, this isn't fucking cool at all. And it bothers me because I've said this before that, like, you know, Jamie kind of takes a turn a little bit, you know, and it's like,
yeah, well, yeah,
he's starting to become
totally becoming like a better character.
And it's like they totally erased that last night with it, because it's like, how do you get redeemed from fucking raping your sister? I mean, it doesn't matter that they've had a bunch of consensual sex. It's like, as soon as she says no, then it's no longer consensual sex.
Yeah, and well, what the director said was flat out, it became consensual at the end, which is already problematic. But at the end, she's saying, this isn't right. He's saying, I don't care. He's saying that, yeah, but if you look closely, she has her legs wrapped around her. And it's like, really? Yeah. See, it's like, if you're trying to say that she has a rape fantasy, I can kind of get that from that character because, you know, I mean, she is way into incest.
Yeah.
So the fact that she might be into that as
well, potentially
fine,
further down
but
the road.
You
know?
You kind of have to establish that beforehand
if
you don't want somebody to look at that and just see how it is.
You know, again, it's like, I think it was just a really poorly handled scene. I mean, I know what the intentions of the scene were and all that kind of stuff, but that's not at all what came across, you know? And it's if it was just a question of like, okay, well, this bad character is raping this other person or whatever, and it's because he's a bad and whatever, and it's like, that's the whole thing. Okay, fair enough, because it's like, I don't think that you should necessarily censor it out where, you know, that sort of thing can't necessarily happen. But, you know...
Well, there's a lot of horrible shit that happens in that show.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if you're going to try and look for redemption for the character later, you don't start with...
Well, I think what the problem is that, like, I mean, it was pretty clear-cut when you're watching exactly what happens, and the director's actor's like, what? No, what are you talking about? She was totally in on it. He's like, what?
The thing is, I think some people, you know, deconstruct a little bit better in the comments. I'm not, again, defending rape of any kind. I feel like I need to say that. But just, like, the pent-up anger he had received from all of his family... But then there also got to the Tyrion thing about how he's like, oh, you know, the imp, the cripple, and the mother of madness. I'm like, he pokes fun at everybody, so, like, that's not really that much of a slight. And then, Jeff, like you said, like, they're relying on some kind of tiny visual cue used in the previous episode to indicate who might have been the real culprit behind poisoning him. Well, kind of using a tiny visual cue to show that somebody's responsible for someone's death, interesting.
Right.
Showing a tiny visual cue to show that somebody's okay with getting raped. You know, like 90% of people, well, I'd even say 97% of people aren't going to pick up on that.
Yeah.
I sure as shit didn't see it.
Mm-mm.
I mean, the book.
Yeah, I didn't either. Yeah. Plus, you talk about, like, in a real life circumstance or something like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean consent in any fucking way.
I mean, and the thing is, like.
Somebody says no, that's it.
Yeah.
They should have said, like, had they done it where, like, in how it was in the book, where she's only objecting because we're going to get caught. Where she's like, no, we're going to get caught. And she's like, I can't help it. And then all of a sudden it's like actually passionate.
Also,
then
our son is laying dead right here. We are literally fucking right next to our dead son.
Yeah, but they don't come across like that.
And
the last time that they showed each other, he came on to her and she said, go fuck yourself.
Right.
I don't have anything to do with you. You left for too long.
She did not like his pimpin.
There's nothing in the show that established that was in any way consensual, which is fine if they want to pursue that as the storyline.
Well, see,
but they seem to not have tried to do that.
In the terms of doing what they did, it sets up, you know, her is a more sympathetic character because of that, and then him is more of a villain again, which I don't know if they want
to
reset it.
But I don't think they tried to do that. That's the problem.
That's absolutely
not. I think they fucked up. Because I saw that, and I was like, holy shit, I feel like an asshole for thinking Jamie has been, like, a pretty cool character lately.
Well, I've gone on record saying that Jamie is, becoming one of my favorite characters, and it's like, oh, now I've just said that one of my favorite characters is a rapist, so that's great. Yeah. You know, that's fucking awesome.
I mean, it's weird, like... Again, this probably sounds bad, but I'm going to kind of put my faith into what they're doing with the show, you know, because I think they've done pretty well so far. If this is one major, like, fucked up misstep, then, well, hopefully they'll figure it out and correct it. It's weird, though, given that, like, George R. R. Martin wrote, the second episode? First episode? Yeah.
Yeah.
So he has his hand in it, so I don't know that he didn't have his hand in this, or everybody kind of stepped back. And, I mean, the thing about Westeros and just the whole Song of Ice and Fire series is just, it is a very patriarchal society, you know, bless you, by the Seven.
It's definitely, Charles, Lord of Light.
There's a white male hierarchy, which you could say is similar to our world or whatever, but yeah, obviously we're having discussion as a bunch of, you know, honkies with dicks. So, you know, it is.
Hey, Jeff, if you could move that away from my leg, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you even talk about their family, you know, it's Tywin.
That wasn't my leg.
Is in charge of the family. He sees his son as less than a bastard.
Yeah.
You know, he sees his one legitimate son as a good one, and that was taken away from him. But now that he's a cripple, he's nothing. And obviously, he sees his daughter as incompetent and takes away her son to mold as a king.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just decisions he makes without talking to anybody in his family. Well, that's just him being like, not that I'm saying they're bad ones, because actually the third one, or the last one I mentioned, pretty good, so we don't have another, like, psychotic little fuck beast.
Plus, you know, another thing about the episode that, like, maybe this is the way they're going with it, and if they go with this, then, you know, I kind of understand it a little bit more, and it's interesting in that way. Is that I think Cersei is a more evil character than Joffrey.
I think that's 100% true.
And so, like, when she's sitting there, and, like, they focus on her while Tywin is basically telling, what's his name, Tinnen?
Tommen.
Whatever. And, yeah, like, I love how he changes, like, one letter. You know, it's like, Joffrey. Yeah, not Thomas, Tommen. But,
how do you get Ned from Eddard? I've always wondered that. Like, what the fuck?
I don't know.
Anyway, go on.
He's a badass. He doesn't last that long anyway, so.
But anyway, where, like, he's like, you know, he's like talking to him, what makes a good king? And he's like, now Joffrey was not wise at all. He's like, that's why he was a horrible fucking king.
Cool. He's all, hey, up top.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and they, like, just show Cersei, and she's just, like, crying because she basically molded him to be exactly how she wanted him
to be. Well, that's kind of the point, too, is that Tywin
but
is
then
essentially
after that
going,
happens,
like, I'm taking this one.
Yeah. You know? And it's sort of like, you're like, yes, that's what you get, you bitch, you know, I hate you, and you pretty much deserve to die just like Joffrey. And then all of a sudden that happens, and you're like, well, shit. You know, it's like, I didn't really want that to happen.
Well, see, and that makes me wonder if why and they did it, which I think it's a poor choice, and just saying, like, now that, like,
are they trying to make her sympathetic, or are they just trying to say that, oh, no, she...
I can't imagine, because...
a consensual thing, because that's what the director is saying, is that it was consensual.
Yeah. Knowing what happens,
if he's a director, he might actually be a blind director. I mean, just throwing it out there.
I mean, knowing kind of
well,
what
happened. Well, he
happens
did say flat out that he never read the portion of it. He only read the script, but still.
Oh, well, that was
because I think he said something about, oh, Lena doesn't like to know the book stuff or whatever. And it's like, it's your fucking job to know the book stuff. You're the fucking director.
Exactly.
Well, if you're
because this is what happens when you don't know the fucking book
stuff. If you're
trying
to follow the book stuff, I mean, like, if they're trying to go in a completely different direction, then I understand it. But I know that it's not like The Walking Dead, where they go in different directions on stuff like that. I don't understand how that sort of slipped through the cracks. If that's what they're trying to convey, I think they really fucked up.
Absolutely. It makes me wonder, like, how nobody at Game of Thrones caught that it wasn't being conveyed the way they wanted it to. Because it's like, I mean, we're three guys that watched it separately. This is the first time we've really talked about it, aside from just a little bit before the show started. All of us had the same read off of it, you know. And I'm surprised that it didn't blow up, like, way sooner online and shit like that, you know, than it did.
But it did. It totally did.
Because I didn't read anything about it until this afternoon, but maybe it was just because I was busy, but it's like...
Yeah, pretty much right off the bat.
But it's like, when I saw the scene last night, one of my first thoughts was, oh, shit, like, they really fucked us up. Like,
watching it, I was just like, Like, yeah. And one thing I will say that they amended that was good is this, like, the Ari and the Hound time, great. And this is just, like, I was like, oh, man, that's, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. I just, I'm baffled because, again, it's like, if it's just, if Jamie's just meant to be a bad guy, then okay, fair enough. Bad guys do bad things. But, not that I necessarily want to see that happen, but you know what I mean? Like, bad guys do bad things, but, like, that's not sort of the trajectory that the character is on. Even in the show, you can see, like you said, Jeff, you can see that he's already starting to redeem himself a little bit and become a better character.
Totally. At least they were setting that up.
Yeah. And I mean, I started thinking, like, what are possible motivations or whatever for him? Like maybe seeing his dead son on this lab makes him want to make another son. I don't know. Like, yeah. Maybe he just is overcome by the...
Cersei, can't you understand? We need to make babies.
Right. I could almost see that thing.
I kind of thought it was, like, this sort of hate sex, you know, where he was just like, you're such a hateful person, and then all of a sudden they, like, get in this passionate thing. I can get that, but it wasn't like
that. It wasn't
that.
Like she that, was, and that's the thing. Like, regardless of what
he said the whole time. He put it on religion. He said, why did the gods make me love a hateful woman?
Right.
Which is kind of like, no, that's on you and your pin pan, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. But you made,
like,
that choice.
Had she then, like, sort of consented to it, like
you know, in the book, you know, like the way it's
verbally
supposed to be.
Consented to
at
it.
At any time said, yes, let's do this, yeah. As opposed to no. Yeah.
Would have
wrong,
eventually made
wrong,
her a better
or,
villain.
Or like, the reason why she's saying no, you know? I mean,
yeah,
I
or
that's,
yeah,
that's
clarify that
well.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like, you could see that she's into it, but she's saying, this isn't the right place.
Yeah.
Then that's, I think, a lot different than her just saying, no, stop, you know, don't do this. This is a right, you know,
well,
it's like
she
telling
knows her
you,
father
no,
is on her side,
it.
And she wants Jaime on her side against Tyrion, you know what I mean? So that's really the purpose of that in the book.
Right, because right. She'd already cut him off by that time, and that's just her trying to rope him back into being on her side against Tyrion, because already in the beginning of the scene, he's already saying, like, yeah, I don't think that Tyrion did this, we need to check it.
Tyrion is carrying Jeff.
Wow.
I offered it to you earlier.
I know, I'm fucking around.
It's the only one I have, sorry.
You offered something to Charles earlier, and now you're telling me that's the only one you had.
Yeah, I offered it to Charles. There you go.
I did buy him a beer last time, so.
You're
so,
fucking dick, Jeff. I bought this motherfucker beers.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, I mean, there's a reason why it happens. Right. There's a reason story-wise that it happens, but they really fucked it up because now they've ruined Jamie's character. They've given us this.
Well,
I mean, you know, I'm sure that they're just going to keep on going with what, you know, and it's like I can kind of ignore it as a book reader and know, okay, well, this is what it was meant to be. But there's a, you know, huge portion of the audience that haven't read the books and don't have that background. So how are they going to get behind Jamie at this point? Because I mean, what, are they going to fix it with dialogue where she's like, you know, we shouldn't have done that by in front of Joffrey? Or, you know what I mean? This was totally consensual sex. We just shouldn't have done it before Joffrey. I mean, like, that's the only way they can really try and rehabilitate that scene, and it's going to read really, really false, you know? It's going to
be
like...
Yeah, it's going to look like a correction.
Which it is. I mean, which it'll be, for sure, you know?
Well, especially after defending, what's her name? The man, woman, man, knight, lady, Brienne. You know, from getting raped and stuff before.
Yeah.
And kind of demonstrating that was, like, his noble stance. He's fine with murder, potential child murder, things like that. But suddenly to be a rapist, it's different.
Yeah. And again,
like,
I mean,
is it okay for him but nobody else, or what?
Well,
or?
You know, and it would have been perfectly well in line with his character in season one.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely. No, I wouldn't have flinched. But, you know, it's like here, not so much. So that was a real bad form on Game of Thrones' part. So, yeah.
All right, should we wrap this one up with some recommendations?
Sure.
All right.
I'll start it off, I guess. The Raid 2 is the sequel to The Raid, as it is implied by the 2. And I just saw it this past weekend, and as amazing as The Raid is, The Raid 2 is more amazing. It's a lot more story-driven, which is to say that it has one. Mm-hmm. Apparently the backstory on that is that they actually wrote The Raid 2, which is Bernal or whatever. They wrote it before they did the original Raid, but they couldn't get funding, so they did the original Raid to get funding for Bernal or whatever, and then they just kind of turned it into a sequel to The Raid or whatever. But it's you know, kind of a typical crime story. Cop goes undercover to prison to get next to the son of a mob boss. So in order to get a job with a mob boss so he can kind of root out police corruption. And it gets a little bit complicated because there's like a whole gang war that starts. But really, the important part here is that there's some of the best martial arts and action scenes I've ever fucking seen. It's massively brutal, massively gory. And there's these awesome car chases where the choreography for the car chases looks like a martial arts like fight. Like, it's not like a typical car chase. It's not like something you're gonna see out of the Born Identity or something like that. It's I've never seen car chases like this before, and it's really cool. So nice. I definitely recommend The Raid 2. You have to have a pretty strong stomach and like martial arts, but if you do those two things, then good.
My recommendation would be the sort of prequel for The Raid, which is Marantau. A lot of people have not watched that, and that is also incredibly excellent. Mostly it doesn't have a whole lot. The Raid sort of has, you know, knife fights, bow staff fights, gun fights, and martial arts. Marantau is pretty much just martial arts. Yeah. I see The Raid 2 also adds car chases into it, which is awesome. And ups the ante on everything else.
Yeah.
But Marantau is sort of the first one of theirs, and it's also Gareth Evans, which it's crazy because he's a Welsh director who's making these Indonesian films.
And holy crap, does he have the best eye for this shit that I've ever seen? Like, it should make.
Well, it's
other...
the two guys. It's the main character of The Raid, and then Mad Dog of The Raid, who. You know, choreograph all the fights in all the movies.
Yeah, I can't pronounce their names, but it's not even just the choreography is a huge part of it, but the way that Gareth Evans moves the camera and stuff like that is amazing.
I'm not trying to say he's, you know, not a part of it or anything.
Those three guys together, though, I mean, seriously.
And Marantau is absolutely essential as well if you want to see just a kick-ass martial arts film. Definitely check out Marantau. I saw it on Netflix. I don't know if it's still on there.
I think it's still there. I think it is, because I saw it on Netflix too, but yeah, I think it's still there.
But definitely check that one out as well. If you liked The Raid, check out Marantau.
And The Raid 2.
Cool. I will recommend... I was trying to look up and see if that movie's on Netflix. Time Lincoln, Fate of the Union. It's by Fred Perry. It's pretty cool. It's just... I think Abraham Lincoln's fighting, I want to say it's Stalin, I can't remember, it's been a couple of years since I read it, but I was watching Batman Brave the Bold, and they had something where Batman teamed up with Abraham Lincoln of Parallel Universe 5501 or something, and they fought John Wilkes Booth in steam-powered exo armor. So it just kind of reminded me of this, where it was just kind of crazy, and it was like Abraham Lincoln ended up like teaming up with a couple other people, I can't remember who, and I'd say he fought Hitler, and then eventually Stalin was the main villain, so kind of a funny, goofy read.
Awesome. Radio.